Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Earlier in the week, we featured an interview about the history of Superman. For many of us of a certain age, the first Superman we remember was actor Christopher Reeve, who portrayed the Man of Steel in movies in the 1970s and 80s. He remained synonymous with the part until a horseback riding accident in 1995 left him paralyzed. From then until his death in 2004, Reeve was a public face on the need for research into ways to treat spinal cord injuries. Work going on in the Milwaukee area is contributing to one aspect of treatment, treatment that could help stabilize a spinal cord injury. They're called neuroprotective drugs. Dr. Shaker Kirpad is director of the Spinal Cord Injury Center at Frederick Hospital and a neurosurgeon at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and he's with us in the studio to talk more. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
What is the current state of medicine in terms of being able to treat the spinal cord in a situation that it's been impacted by a significant injury?
So when the spinal cord gets injured, typically we're talking about a blunt injury, which is what often happens when a person gets in a car crash or dives into a shallow pool or other similar trauma. It is much more rare to have a penetrating or a sharp injury by a projectile such as a bullet or a knife, although that has been known to occur somewhat on a few occasions. So when there's a blunt injury, typically it is a fragment of the bony spine or what most people would call a vertebra or a disc that breaks off from where it normally is and it impinges upon the spinal cord and causes a bruise. Normally, if a bruise were to occur in the arm or the leg, you'd have a swelling for a couple of days and then it would go away. But the spinal cord is composed of a bunch of nerves and a bruise is very detrimental. So there is what we call a primary injury, which is caused by the direct impact. And then there's a secondary injury because the body tries to diminish the impact of the primary injury and it sends in a bunch of agents that fight inflammation and essentially cause inflammation, which is the swelling that you see in other parts of the body. And this secondary injury is even more detrimental in the spinal cord because it further worsens the initial damage that's caused by the original trauma.
Let me just make sure I'm getting this straight. The body is trying to heal itself, but in doing that, it's actually making the situation worse?
Absolutely. So if you were to imagine the primary injury occurring over a small area, let's say size of a dime, for example, the secondary injury can now, expand that area to the size of a quarter. So it's sometimes twice, three times the size of the primary injury, and it does two things. Number one, it disrupts the nerves over a much larger area because the body's natural reaction to the primary injury. And the second thing that it does is it then kills off or makes ineffective the nerves in that larger area, so it's now much harder to reconnect those nerves. So there's not a whole lot you can do about avoiding the primary injury. It is what it is. But you can do a lot about the secondary injury, especially if you can prevent the extension of the area where the primary injury expands into. You're able to actually protect a large portion of the spinal cord that would otherwise have been irreversibly hurt.
Is the idea then to trick the body into not having that reaction or stopping that reaction in its tracks, if you will?
That's exactly right. So the whole philosophy and the idea behind interfering with the secondary injury processes in a way that's beneficial to the spinal cord is to limit the size of the secondary injury. So to trick the body, as you said, in ways in which the area of the spinal cord that's hurt can be limited to as close as possible to that dime-sized area of the primary injury.
Well, and so then putting this in terms that people can appreciate, are we talking about the difference between paralysis and not paralysis? Or what are we talking about just in terms of the what's the distinction between keeping it in that small, say, dime-sized injury and allowing that area to be larger?
It could make a huge functional difference. So it could be the difference between complete paralysis and incomplete paralysis, which makes a large difference in terms of functional outcome. It could also mean, for example, if a person gets injured in the lower cervical spinal cord, just as an example, and they may be a quadriplegic or quadriparetic, which means almost paralyzed but not quite, when they come to the hospital. But if you limit the area of secondary injury, you might be able to preserve or reconfigure function of the triceps muscle, which is extremely important when a paralyzed patient needs to transfer from the bed to a chair, for example. So having the ability to use their triceps makes a huge difference. So normally, if you're able to limit the size of the injury such that you can preserve the function of more muscles, it can be functionally incredibly beneficial to the patient and help them reintegrate much more normally into normal life.
Well, and so can you talk about the ways that you're starting to go after that reaction? What are the what has changed to allow you to be able to, if not already take these next steps, be on the path to be able to take those next steps?
Well, there's a number of mediators of inflammation, and these are standard mediators that occur wherever one has a bruise in the body. The spinal cord is no exception. And the technologies that a number of entities are sponsoring involves interfering with one of these mechanisms of inflammation. So ideally, of course, it would be nice to have one drug that can blot out all inflammation. That would obviously be ideal, but you can't necessarily do that. You can only use aspirin for a fever, for example. So you use one particular molecule that you think has the most, where the money is essentially. And so in that sense, there's about two or three molecules that have passed muster in all of the initial tests, which typically involve a number of years doing experimentation in the laboratory using animals typically, and have subsequently graduated from that, gotten FDA approval, and now we're working with about two or three different agents that show promise in patients.
Well, and now presumably when we're talking about acute spinal injury, it seems like it would be critical that the treatment take place in the immediate aftermath?
Absolutely. So the window for the swelling, the secondary injury, is typically it starts between about 12 to 24 hours after the primary injury, like you would expect in a bruise elsewhere. And then there's a peak, and then it sort of dies away after about 3 or 4 days. So typically most of the neuroprotective strategies are employed in that time frame, acutely after injury, as close to the injury as possible. So regardless of which drug you look at, most people would like to have the first dose in within 12 hours after the injury. And then the back end continues for a variable amount of time depending on what mediator of the inflammation you're going after. So it can last as much as a day and a half to 2 days after the first dose and up to a month after the first dose.
So would you envision that this would become a part of the arsenal for emergency room physicians, or this would still come after consulting with a spinal care specialist?
So currently, in terms of logistics, we're working to see how quickly we can get the first dose in, because as you can imagine, logistics is a big factor in this. But if you were to ask me to look 5 years ahead and let's say one of these treatments works in a reproducible fashion, perhaps this could be something that could be started as early as the emergency room or maybe even earlier when the patient gets discovered, you know, at the site of a traffic accident by the emergency medical technicians. Obviously, that would be ideal. We're nowhere near that first. We're still in the stage of proof of concept, but that would be the goal.
Well, and I would imagine it is difficult to set up a trial for humans in a situation like this because you have to find people who have just been injured in this way.
That's absolutely correct. So the harder part about the trials with these neuroprotective agents is, again, the logistics. In terms of – there's a lot of things that the FDA requires us to do, including to prove that this patient who would be a potential enrollee in a clinical trial has a complete spinal cord injury, i.e. they're completely paralyzed, because you don't want to take a risk with an incompletely paralyzed person. It could make them worse. So number two would be to try to get all the consent process to explain what the trial is to the patient and then get them enrolled. And so obviously they have to think about it. And all of this takes time. And then we have to go through approved laboratory processes to get the drug ready and get the drug shipped to the right – to get the drug formulated in the right fashion. So logistics is the hardest part about getting the drug in at the right time.
Do you see this as playing a role? I know medicine is looking at ways of doing, I guess it's neuroregenerative therapy to either reverse paralysis or essentially – help someone who has had a spinal cord injury get better. Does this play a role in stabilizing the situation for a time when 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, there might be new therapies that are discovered to help someone who has been paralyzed or otherwise injured in that way?
Absolutely. I think this would be – when you look at it in a certain way, this would be a synergistic type of approach. So essentially a person gets an acute injury. You can't prevent the size of that, but you can reduce the amount of secondary inflammation or secondary injury. So you now use these neuroprotective agents in the acute setting, i.e. in the first few hours to days, to limit the secondary injury. So now you're left with a smaller void which you have to regenerate to fully restore function when you're eventually ready to have the regenerative therapies like stem cells and so on. So this would essentially work hand in hand with neuroregenerative therapies. This would just be a first step.
Well, and so how does the work you're doing in this area relate to the kinds of work that is being done in the realm of neurodegenerative diseases, things like ALS?
ALS, as an example, is a much more slowly degenerative condition, but it is associated with acute exacerbations, which means that the patient has stepwise reduction in the level of their function due to an inflammatory reaction. MS is another example of the same. It is conceivable that you can use neuroprotective agents, and some have been tried, where you can reduce the amount of inflammation after each of those detrimental episodes, if you will. So the way these could work in a context of a neurodegenerative disease like MS or ALS is that it could slow down the progression. And in that context would be it would be able to confer a more productive functional life for those patients.
Would you consider yourself optimistic that this work is going to have a significant difference on the spinal cord injury paradigm?
I think so. I think that the progress is going to be stepwise. It's going to be, obviously as physicians we would like miracles sometimes more than the patients would. But I think in a systematic study like this, I think we have to be patient. However, these drugs that are being under trial right now have passed muster through a whole bunch of rigorous testing paradigms. So they do offer a significant amount of promise. And in terms of their utility 5-10 years from now, I think they're absolutely essential, because we know the cascade of detrimental reactions that occurs after spinal cord injury, and it's almost critical to limit that zone of injury, as we call it, to as small of a zone as possible, so it's easier to rebuild the spinal cord with a future promising therapy.
Well, Dr. Shekhar Kirpad, thank you so much.
Thank you again for having me.
Dr. Shekhar Kirpad is director of the Spinal Cord Injury Center at Froedtert Hospital and a neurosurgeon at the Medical College of Wisconsin. His work includes research into the use of neuroprotective agents in treating spinal cord injuries. A quick break now, and in just a few moments, we start a weekly feature honoring National Poetry Month, which is April. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.